Okay, good morning everybody. Again, Erev Shabbos. Welcome back to our Erev Shabbos Kodesh class learning. We thank our hostess and sponsor and her family very much, even though they prefer to remain anonymous. Tisku l'mitzos l'maisim tovim. To bring a lot of zchuyos for a lot of Shabbosos spent in good health with nachas. So last time we had a fascinating class, we learned the Medrash Tanchuma, which Rav Shimshon Pinkas quoted about Shlomo HaMelech planting pilpilim, peppers, in Yerushalayim, and he understood the lines of the whole world that ran under Yerushalayim. So what does this all have to do with Shabbos, and why does Rav Shimshon Pinkas bring that up? So for those who are wondering, we are learning the Sefer Nefesh Shimshon Shabbos Kodesh, making the most of insights into the meaning and purpose of Shabbos, teachings of Rav Pinkas Zatzal. So I'm just going back to the end of page 47. If you don't have the Sefer, you know I read and expound upon it. The end of page 47, just to recap, I'm not reteaching what we learned last time. End of page 47. Chazal tell us that Shlomo HaMelech, so this is a 1 minute recap on last time's class. Chazal tells us that Shlomo HaMelech planted every kind of fruit tree that exists, even pepper trees in Yerushalayim. That's a quote from Medrash Tanchuma Kedoshim, which we learned last time. But we all know each kind of tree needs its own climate, says Rav Pinkas. Some fruits grow only in Florida, others grow only in India. There is no one place where everything flourishes. So today, with the global world becoming smaller and smaller and transport, so you could get fruits from all over the world. But really, before they had, before the world was so small, so to speak, for certain fruits grew in certain places, and that's what you had. So Pinkas says, how did Shlomo Melech get all these trees to grow and bear fruit if they're not native to Yerushalayim? The Medrash answers our question. Shlomo, in his great wisdom, says Pinkas, knew the invisible lines that extend out from Yerushalayim, which is the heart of the world. In fact, if you remember, the Medrash calls it like the navel, the center of the world. Just like the navel, what we call the belly button, is the center of the body, says the Medrash, the tabor of the guf, so too Yerushalayim is the center of the world, and it extends from there to every place on earth. Thus, he planted the pepper tree on the line leading to the land of Cush, and it bore fruit, as we learned right away. Okay, going to the top of page 48. Top of the page 48. So we did that last time with the magician side. Now, the whole world depends upon the heart, just like the guf. The body depends upon the heart. If a person, chas v'sham, has a, God forbid, an amputation on a certain limb, if the heart is beating and strong, a person could technically live without their foot. Of course, Hashem created us a certain way. I'm not saying it's good. Nobody misunderstand me. But you could live without that limb. In fact, with prosthetics today and modern technology, the world has come so far. A person could live without their hearing. So I'm not trying to insult anyone. I'm being very personal here. It's not ideal, you don't want it, but you could live without it and still manage if a person does not have hearing, if a person does not have a foot. But if a person does not have a heart, they can't live. There's no life. It doesn't work. You can't have without your heart. So too, the whole world depends upon its heart. So the whole body depends upon its heart. The whole world depends upon the heart, which is Yerushalayim. Underground arteries, says Rav Pinkas, reach from Yerushalayim, and they run to Africa, to India, to every country on earth. So what keeps us alive here? It's these underground lines that we don't see, that Shlomo Melech understood, that run all the way from Yerushalayim to Woodmere. So therefore, we're alive because Yerushalayim is supplying us with life even today. Just like the foot doesn't look externally to be directly connected to the heart, but without the heart, the foot, without the heart, nothing in the body will live, because there's underground lines running from the heart to the whole body. So too, there's underground lines running from Yerushalayim to the whole world. Says Rav Pinkas, Shlomo knew where every artery goes, so he planted the appropriate fruit tree on top of that artery to tap into the koch of that country. Now, Yerushalayim, says Rav Pinkas, and especially the Temple Mount and the Beis Hamikdash, what we call Har Moriah. Why is it called Har HaMoriah? So Rashi tells us, why is it called Har HaMoriah? Rashi tells us in Parak Chof Beis by the Akedas Yitzchak. Why is it called Har HaMoriah? Because Avram Avinu said, Bahar Hashem Yera'eh, Har HaMoriah, Ki Misham Hotzei Hora'a L'Yisra'a Maseches Tainis Tes Zayin. Why is it called Hora'a? It's from the word Mora, Torah, instruction. Kimisham Hotse Hora'a L'Yisrael. From this center point, in the Sefer it says the Temple Mount, that's because the Beis HaMikdash was on there, but it's also Har HaMoriah, because from there instruction comes out to the whole world. So that's exactly what we're saying. It's the source running on all those invisible lines the source of all knowledge, the source of all Torah, the source of all Ruchnias stems from that Makom HaMikdash. And it's the very heart of the world, says Rav Pinkas. Just like your body can't live if your heart's not pumping blood to all the places in your body, we cannot live if Yerushalayim is not the heart of the world, pumping blood, so to speak, Torah, lifeblood to all of us. And that's why, says Rav Pinkas, even the slightest sin carried out during the service of the Beis HaMikdash is punishable by death. If something is wrong with the heart, it affects everything else. Going back to my analogy of the body, if something's wrong with the hearing, the person could still live. But if something's wrong with the heart, chas v'shalom, to the point where it's so extreme, the person can't live. So this is the analogy with Yerushalayim. If Yerushalayim is the heart of the world, so if something goes wrong in the heart, it's catastrophic. If it goes wrong somewhere else, it's bad, but it might not be catastrophic. So too, Yerushalayim. So if someone is in the epitome of the heart, the innermost chamber of the heart, which is Har Moriah, and then you're in the innermost chamber of the innermost chamber, which is the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and something goes wrong there, it's catastrophic, and therefore that person is Chayiv Misa. So the same goes for Shabbos. Shabbos Kodesh is the spiritual heart, which contains all the Kedusha of the world. So we have the physical heart of the body without which you cannot exist. If the leg is missing, the person could live. If the hearing's missing, the person could live. If the heart's missing, that's it. Then we have the spiritual heart of the world, which is Yerushalayim. Then we have the spiritual heart of Knesset Yisrael, which is Shabbos Kodesh. Shabbos Kodesh is the spiritual heart, which contains all the Kedusha of the world. Shabbos pumps life into the world, just like the heart pumps life-giving blood into the body. And then I'm going to say, because Rav Pinkas was talking about Har HaMoriah, just like Har HaMoriah pumps the instruction, Misham Hotzei Hora'ah, Torah, Mora, all the instruction for the whole world pumps from Yerushalayim. The 6 days of the week derive all their vitality from Shabbos. So it's not like we have 6 days and then we have Shabbos. Shabbos gives influence and life and vitality and blood to all the other 6 days. They only exist because of Shabbos. It's not that they exist and Shabbos exists. Shabbos pumps the blood from itself, so to speak, obviously in a spiritual sense, in a Kedusha sense, to all the other days of the week. That's why Shabbos, says Rav Pinkas, is so stringent. There's no room for leniency. What happens if you're lenient with the heart? The person's going to, chas v'shalom, die. What happens if, chas v'shalom, there's Churban and we're lenient, so to speak, with Yerushalayim? Then there's galus. You have to be kicked out. There's no room for leniency in the heart of something. So too, he says, with Shabbos Kodesh. That's why Shabbos is so stringent. It is the heart. Just like the Beis HaMikdash and Har HaMoriah is the heart, just like the physical heart is your heart, so too Shabbos is the heart of all Kedusha. And now he answers his question, which we asked a few weeks ago on the top of page 46. Why is the penalty for not keeping Shabbos so severe? It's almost like it's not a punishment, but rather a natural consequence. If you don't keep your heart healthy, the natural consequence is that person's going to die. And so too, you know, if you walk around eating only fatty foods and things bad for the heart in such an excess, so the person's going to die. It's not even like a punishment. It's a natural consequence of not taking care of your heart. So too, the natural consequence of not taking care of the heart of Kedusha, which is Shabbos, is that the punishment is very stringent. That's what he says. The 6 days of the week derive all their vitality from Shabbos. Just like the Beis HaMikdash is the heart of the world, so too Shabbos is the heart of Kedusha, and that's why by Shabbos it's so stringent. In addition, Shabbos desecration mars the very depths of a Jew's heart. Shabbos desecration, Chil Shabbos, affects your heart. Why? Because if Shabbos is the heart in Kedusha, and your heart is the heart physically, then you understand that one heart affects another. So what I do in the spiritual realm affects the physical realm. That's a principle of Yehadus. Everything in the physical world has a spiritual mirror. So if I spiritually mar the heart, which is Shabbos, then physically, my physical heart would be marred as well. Shabbos desecration mars the very depths of a Jew's heart because it will infect his intrinsic kedusha as a Jew. It will diminish his emunah. he who publicly desecrates the Shabbos, we're not talking about a tinuk shenishba, which means a baby was captured, okay? We're not talking about someone who has no idea, and they never had chinuch, and they never had upbringing, and they mamish do not know. They're not trying to be a mumra lahachis because they're rebelling against, they know God, and they rebel against God. They never learn. But someone who knows, who has some awareness, and then he goes out of his way to desecrate, it affects his intrinsic kedush as a Jew. It affects his emunah. He who publicly desecrates Shabbos is considered, regarding certain halachos, as a non-Jew, which I also found was very, very interesting. I'm going to quote from Rav Moshe Tversky, the biography of Rav Moshe Tversky, Zatzal, Hashem Yimkom Damo. He was one of the Hernof Kedoshim, Mamish Gaon, Yeshivas Taras Moshe. So one second, I'm just opening up to the page I want to be on. So we're talking about how stringent one must be when it comes to Shmirah Shabbos and not desecrating the Shabbos. So listen to this vignette about Rav Moshe Tversky Zatzal. Okay? This is the biography of Malach in our midst. I'm skipping a little. Here we go. Many stories of Rav Tversky's dikduk b'mitzvos, his exactness in observing the mitzvos, are the stuff of legends. One of these legends was witnessed by a friend, Yibad al-Chaim Tovim, Rabbi Chanoch Teller. It occurred during the years that, who himself is a very renowned author and very prominent personality as well from Yerushalayim. It occurred during the years that the Tverskys lived in the Arzei Habira neighborhood of Yerushalayim. So this is told over by Rabbi Teller. Rabbi Teller relates, obviously this is all about Shmir Shabbos and the stringency of Shabbos, which is why I'm bringing it to you now. Before they installed drains on this street, my kids would jokingly call it Nahar Yakim, Yakim River, instead of Rehov Yakim, Yakim Street, because during the rainy season, it would become like a river. All the rain from the Beis Yisrael neighborhood would flow down our street. One time on Shabbos, it was pouring, and the water streamed down the street in rushing rivulets. Says Rabbi Teller, I daven at the Mir Yeshiva on Shabbos, and they start at 7. I like to get there a little bit early, so I was walking out of my home and up Rehov Yakim, which is kids called Nahar Yakim, around 6:40 a.m., 20 to 7 Shabbos morning. I noticed Rav Tversky, listen carefully, standing perfectly still in the middle of the street in the pouring rain, getting absolutely soaked. He was simply frozen to his spot. Had it been anyone else, I certainly would have gone over to inquire why they were standing like that. I would have offered my assistance. But with Rav Tversky, it was so plainly obvious, his socks must have gotten soaked through and through, and he was concerned that walking would constitute the forbidden act of squeezing water out of a garment, according to some opinions. Had I said anything, it would have been completely out of place and quite awkward. So I just continued along my way. I learn after davening on Shabbos morning, continues Rabbi Teller. So I didn't get back home until about 10:45 a.m. Okay, that was at 6:40. To my utter shock and bewilderment, I saw Rav Tversky was rooted to his spot. I don't recall for sure if he was still there when I left my home once again around 1 p.m. from Mincha. What I do remember for sure, though, is that when I passed by there again in the late afternoon, I saw that he had thankfully somehow managed to extricate himself from his predicament. So I thought that this was a very powerful illustration of a real life tzaddik in our time, who understands that Shabbos is the heart of all Kedusha. You can't make mistakes when it comes to the heart. Because if a person doesn't have a heart, they can't live. If we don't have Shabbos properly, which is art, if you damage the heart, we're missing in Kedusha. Rav Tversky would not move from his spot because his socks were soaking. And now what's he going to do? And God forbid he should be over. Should be Michal Shabbos Chalila. So he could not move. Scrupulous fulfillment of mitzvos for Rav Tversky is not only in terms of the attendant details of any given mitzvah, but also regarding the underlying attitude that one's behavior reflects and how he goes about fulfilling the mitzvah. So it's not just to be scrupulous in asiyas and mitzvos, in Shmirah Shabbos, it's the attitude by which we go through it. For example, he would often mention to his sons how important it is to rise earlier than normal on Isru Chag, the first weekday following Sukkot or Pesach. Why? Because this demonstrates one's excitement to perform the mitzvah of tefillin after a relatively long break. Parenthetically, Rav Tversky demonstrated a special affinity for the mitzvah of tefillin all year long. By the end of his life, he owned a few pairs of tefillin, so he could fulfill the mitzvah in accordance with as many opinions as possible. While his sons were living at home, he would even borrow their tefillin, because those tefillin had certain chumras and hidurim that his did not. But the vinyan about Shabbos is a beautiful illustration of what Rav Shimshon Pinkus is talking about. And that is that Shabbos desecration marks the very depths of a Jew's heart. It affects his intrinsic kedusha as a Jew, It affects his emunah. And he who publicly desecrates Shabbos is considered, regarding certain halachos, says Rav Tversky, as a non-Jew. Okay, next section. Let us consider the message, middle of page 48. Okay, the subheading is, if Tisha B'Av falls on Shabbos, it's still Shabbos. So what would take precedence, Shabbos or Tisha B'Av? Okay, let us consider the message of this familiar Chazal, says of Pinkas. He's quoting from Maseches Tainis, Chav Tes Amud Beis. On Tisha B'Av that falls on Shabbos, which we have had, there are many halachos, shalosh shudas, walking publicly, gathering in groups. It's always very interesting. But we keep Shabbos. On Tisha B'Av that falls on Shabbos, one may eat and drink whatever one wishes, says the Gemara, and have a table as laden, even laden, laden, which one? Laden? Yes? Okay, thank you. And have a table as laden, even as that of Shlomo HaMelech in his prime. So it's the actual day of Tisha B'Av. So it's Churban Beis HaMikdash, and we fast, and we mourn, and we sit on the floor, and we don't eat, and we put ashes on our head, and we take off our shoes. But there's a contrast and a conflict now between Tisha B'Av and Shabbos. What should we do? It's also Shabbos. And I remember in past years asking a Shaila about having company on that Shabbos. May you have certain people who are in need of a place to go. I'm not talking about if you're just stop socializing, which is very nice if that works for you, but you know that you could do all the other weeks of the year. You should ask a shy that, but having company perhaps of people who need a place to go, which is a different category. And the answer is yes, you could have it. It's no problem. It might also be that socializing company is okay. I don't know. I've never asked that Shaila for Tisha B'Av that falls on Shabbos. But when Shabbos comes and it's Tisha B'Av, you could have that company. You eat me. You have Shabbos. What are Chazal telling us? Says Rav Pinkas. Tisha B'Av is a day in which we realize we have no real life without Hashem being in our midst. Without Hashem in our midst, without the Beis HaMikdash, there's Churban, and we're in Galus, and there's a degree of Hester Panim, that's a condition of Galus automatically, and there's a Mechitas HaBarzal, there's a terrible iron partition that separates between us and the Ribono Sha'olam, and it's been destroyed. Unless the Shechina dwells amongst us in the Beis HaMikdash, says Rav Pinkas, we might as well just sit on the ground and cry, for we have nothing. The problem is, after almost 2,000 years, we're so used to Galus, we don't even realize, I'm talking to myself, we don't even have the capacity to understand what we're really missing. Okay, Eretz Yisrael today, as wonderful as it is not Geula. There are difficulties of the secular government. There are struggles. It's not Geula. So even if you're in Yerushalayim today, we don't know what we're missing because the Beis HaMikdash is not there. It's not what it's supposed to be. So if the Shechina does not dwell amongst us in the Beis HaMikdash, we might just as well sit on the ground and cry, for we have nothing. I'm now going to Rav Moshe Tversky's grandfather, Zatzal, Rav Yashar Ber Soloveitchik, the Rav. I'm quoting from his Sefer, "The Lord is Righteous in All His Ways, Reflections on Tisha B'Av and the Kina." What page I see right here. Okay, let's listen carefully. So this was Rav Moshe Tversky, was the Rav's eldest grandson. Okay, let's listen. Whoops, sorry, I'm muted by mistake. Okay, listen carefully. At first, this piece isn't going to seem to be connected necessarily, but I'm going to, I think, make a nice connection for you. Let's go through this teaching of the Rav. Says Rav Soloveitchik, what he's going through different aspects of the Churban. Okay? This is an essay on different aspects of the Churban. So, I don't know, where does the essay start? Okay, the first aspect of the Churban is understanding the role of one, the role of a Kodesh Baruch Hu in the events of the Churban. So the first thing to understand is that there was a role of God. It wasn't happenstance, did I say that right? Happenstance, yeah. It didn't just happen randomly. There was a role of a Kodesh Baruch Hu in the events of the Churban. Number two, that the Jewish people as a result of Churban are considered filth and refuse amongst the nations. That's a quote from Ich on the Kinos. That's Nakuda number two. Nakuda number three that Rav Soloveitchik discusses is, if I could find it, it's a lengthy essay, very lengthy. So Nakuda number one, Hashem is a rule. Nakuda number two, as a result of Galus, we are considered filth and refuse amongst the nations. Sichi uma os. Then, we're like disgusting to them. There's an element of blasphemy in the relationship of the non-Jewish world to us. The way they relate to us is a denial of God's omnipotence. Nakuda number four of the Churban. Here we go. The fourth point that the Rav brings out in this essay is that the Churban was unexpected. Unexpected. A person never really thinks the disaster is going to come. I just finished reading an incredible Holocaust book. I highly recommend it. Excuse me. It was written up in Mishpacha about a month ago. I hope somebody saw it. About Lily's promise, Lily Ebert and her grandson, Dov Foreman, from England. It's just I was so taken by it, I couldn't order it online. There were none left on Amazon. My friend managed to get one. And she said, you're right, there's none left. So she lent it to me after she finished it. And I just finished it this week. It was so amazing. But she writes, and she was from Hungary. And she writes in there, she should live in, I think she's 93 or 94. She writes in there that they didn't believe it was going to happen. They didn't think it could happen because she writes, how could you believe the unbelievable? And I remember when my son interviewed for the Yeshiva Darchei Torah Survivor Project, Adopt a Survivor, the children adopt a Holocaust survivor. Soon there won't be this project anymore as time passes. So they interviewed Mr. Mickey Goldschmidt. He lives in Woodmere. He was also from Hungary, Amash. And Mr. Goldschmidt told us the exact same thing. Not that I read in a book. I read. He said, we could not believe it. We simply could not believe it. Because how could people believe something that was so totally unbelievable? The Churban was unexpected, says the Rav. The very first word in the very first kina that we recite on Tisha B'Av, the very first word in the first kina that we recite on Tisha B'Av is Shavat. Shin, Beis, Tav. Shavat. This word reflects an idea that Chazal emphasized many times. In fact, says the Rav, I've never understood why they mention it and emphasize it so much. It means to cease. It's something I stressed to you in this class. Shavat does not mean, I tell you that, I've told you that before. Shavat does not mean rest. Okay? It means cessation. That's what really Shabbos is, the cessation of work. God ceased his work. And on Shabbos, we are to cease. It's not really a day of rest. Shabbos means a day of cessation. It means not only to cease, to terminate, to stop, but, says the Rav, there's an additional connotation in the word Shavat, which means suddenness. One of the Pesukim in Eicha says, Shavat misos libenu. I think it's in Parakai, I think. Shavat misos libenu, I think, yeah. Nehepach le'evel mecholenu. Shavat misos libenu. The joy of our hearts with Churban has ceased. Nehepach le'evel mecholenu. Our dances have turned into avelos. This is a Pesuk from Eicha, Shavat. So it doesn't just mean the joy in our hearts has ceased. It also means, says the Rav, suddenness. There is an element of suddenness or unexpectedness in the word Shavat. It means suddenly something important has ceased. Suddenly something important has changed. Sometimes, says the Rav, people expect a disaster, God forbid, intuitively, intellectually, or logically. They realize something terrible is about to happen. As a result, when it occurs, it's not experienced as something new. It's still terrible, but it was expected. However, sometimes disaster strikes suddenly, and the sudden disaster is worse than an expected or anticipated disaster. An example could be, says the Rav, a tornado. One did not expect anything, and suddenly there it is. This is Shavat, Suru Meni. There was cessation, suddenness, so many, Hashem turned away from us. The very beginning of the first kinnah, is that what we say? It means suddenly, instantly. And now he ties it into Shabbos. He quotes from Parshas Ki Tisa, Perak Lamed Aleph of Shemos. And on the seventh day, Uvayom Hashvi Shavat Vayinafash. On the seventh day, Hashem ceased, not rested, and he was refreshed, Vayinafash. And Chazal say in Medrash Bereishis Rabbah that this resting occurred within 1 second. So the Rabbis bring further proof from Medrash Bereishis Rabbah, Perak Yud, Simen Tes, that it means a suddenness, because the Medrash says on this pasuk, Ubayam Hashvi Shavat Vayinafash, that Hashem's resting, Kaviyachal, occurred within a second, a split second. During the first half of the second, there was work, God was working, and then in the other half of the second, there was rest. Chol, the profane, ordinary week, came to an end suddenly. Shabbat doesn't just mean to stop. It means with a suddenness. And then it was Shabbos. Shabbos means Shabbat, says the Rav. Stop, change, suddenly, precisely, instantaneously. When Shabbos comes in, there's an instantaneous change between Chol and Kodesh. Now, we take in Shabbos earlier. The reason we take in Shabbos earlier is because we don't know that precise second when it exactly happened. But Kosh Baruch Hu, of course, calculates the Itim V'Rga'im. He calculates every split nanosecond of a second. He understands. We have to take it in early. In fact, says the Rav, Chazal add, this is so interesting. Chazal saying the Medrash that many creatures were supposed to be created, but they were not. Because God, Shabbat, the days become sanctified to God, no more creation. But people cannot understand this, says the Rav. A human being cannot change instantly, we know that. If you've ever tried to change a midah, or an area of avodas Hashem, or an area of physical health, it doesn't happen in a split second. It's a process. If you think this could happen in a split second, then you're setting yourself up for failure. That's not how the world works. A human being cannot change instantly. He must do so gradually. Slowly. If I am engaged in something, says the Rav, and I have in mind to stop, I withdraw gradually. It's even like an extreme example from my understanding is that they have to wean people off of certain drugs, because if you stop suddenly, the body could crash and actually die if they have a dependency on that. You need to stop suddenly. I mean, stop gradually, not suddenly. But when HaKadosh Baruch Hu finished creating the world, it was not a gradual retreat. That's the meaning of Uvayam Hashvi'i Shavat Vayinafash. In a split second, God went from creating, Bria, Yotzer, to cessation. This is exactly what Chazal means, says Rav, when they talk about Chatzos or Bachatzos, the element of precision. No matter how far science may reach, says the Rav, no human being will ever be able to achieve this kind of precision, divine exactitude. There is no absolute precision for a human being, says the Rav. There cannot and there never will be. That's the limitation of the human being. We're not godly, so we need to do things gradually. We can't enter into a split second. Given this interpretation, says the Rav, okay, so after he spoke about Shabbos and the understanding, that Hashem didn't just stop creating and rested, but was with a sense of suddenness, and he bases it on a Medrash Bereishis Rabbah, where the Medrash says that within 1 second he was creating, and the next second he wasn't creating, and the Medrash goes so far as to say, interestingly, that there were animals that were meant to be, I'm putting that in quotes, created, but they were not, because Hashem ceased suddenly. Given this interpretation, so it's interesting because in this piece, the Rav is connecting the Churban and Shabbos, and it's exactly what Pinkus is doing in our Sefer. He's connecting the Churban and Shabbos. Given this interpretation, says Rabbi Salavitchik, Rabbi Elazar HaKalir wants to express the idea that although people were told the Churban Beis HaMikdash would occur, and they were told Jerusalem would be destroyed, they never really expected it to take place. And when the Churban did strike, it struck suddenly. In fact, this is stated in a verse in Eicha, says Rav, Perek Daled, Pasuk Yod Beis, the kings of the earth did not believe, nor did any of the inhabitants of the world, that the foe or enemy could enter the gates of Jerusalem. They simply did not believe it. And that's why the first word of the kinos begins with the word Shabbat. What does it mean? It means that it was a suddenness to the Churban. Continues Rav Salavitchik, I just want to see something. Continues the Rav. I'm skipping, I'm not reading the whole essay. But then they got up in the morning And lo and behold, contrary to their expectations, the Beis HaMikdash was gone. Jerusalem was in ruins. The people were sent into captivity. This, it's italicized, and for emphasis, this was the major tragedy of Churban Yerushalayim. Not just that it happened, but it happened Shavat. Suddenly, instantly, contrary to expectation. In the Haftorah of Parshas Bahar, says the Rav, which is from Yirmiyahu Perek Lamed Beis, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Yirmiyahu to leave Yerushalayim and go to Anatot, Anasos, and buy a field from his uncle. When he left Yerushalayim, Yirmiyahu was the prophet who foreshadowed the Churban. When he left, the Beis HaMikdash was in place, on its foundations. The priests, meaning the Kohanim, had not moved from their place. They were performing the service. They were doing their routine. But when Yirmiyahu returned from the purchase in the real estate transaction, he found the Beis HaMikdash gone. Rabbi Eliyahu Kitov, in a Sefer HaToda'ah, talks about this element of Churban as well. Yirmiyahu was sent out of Yerushalayim, and when he came back, he couldn't understand what was happening because he didn't expect it. Even Yirmiyahu didn't expect it. The one of prophecy. Chazal tell us, going back to the Rav, that the people coming to Jerusalem were able to see from afar the smoke rising high from the Temple Mount. One of the miracles that occurred in the Beis HaMikdash, as per Pirkei Avos, was that the wind did not disperse the pillar of smoke rising from the altar. After concluding the business transaction with his uncle, Yirmiyahu returned to Yerushalayim. He drew near the city. He lifted his eyes to see the pillar of smoke. But this time he didn't see it. It was then that he understood what happened. Says the Rav, Yirmiyahu was the prophet of Churban. He was the one who prophesied. He was the one who predicted. He was the one who wrote Eicha 18 years before the Churban. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him many times, says Rav Salvechik, that the Churban would strike. HaKadosh Baruch Hu warned him many times that Yerushalayim would be wiped out. Hashem told him many times that Beis HaMikdash would be set afire and consumed by flames. He often beheld a vision of Churban, of destruction. Yet he was the messenger of God. Yes, not yet. Yes, he was the messenger of God. He was sent to tell the people about the Churban. He tried to prevent the Churban. But, quote, even he did not realize it would happen so soon. When he left that day to go to his uncle to buy the field, he had every intention of returning and the Beis HaMikdash would be standing. But when he drew close to Yerushalayim, it struck him suddenly. It happened suddenly, even for him, on the day or night he spent outside the city. This is Shabbat. This is unexpected. And it's interesting, again, the Rav tells us that the very first word, in the very first kinnah that we recite on Tisha B'Av is Shabbat. One short paragraph and one a little bit longer paragraph. Two more paragraphs of the Rav. Chazal tells the Maseches Gittin, which is the Masechtos of Churban. Masechtos Churban are the only thing you're allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av, or the Halachas of Avelus, or Eicha with commentary. Chazal tell us in Gittin 57a that half the inhabitants of Tur Malka were celebrating, while the other half had already begun to be destroyed. Those who were celebrating simply did not know and could not imagine what was happening. On the contrary, they believed the Churban would never happen. A person can go through life, says the Rav, finding both joy and sadness in the world. Shlomo Melech tells us that in the beginning of Perek Gimel and Kohelas. There are times to laugh and there are times to cry. There's times to mourn, there's times to rejoice. There's times to dance and there's times to not dance. There's times to hug, there's times to withdraw from hugging. A person can go through life finding both joy and sadness. Vayavo Avram mispod l'sarva l'vkosa. In the world, life's experiences are mixed. But inwardly, on the whole, a person is satisfied with life, says the Rav. He is capable of finding mitigating circumstances, making excuses or apologies if he commits a mistake or an error. Because on the whole, life is an enjoyable affair. Hashem made a beautiful world. Hashem made changing leaves. Hashem made... I have a friend who's in Arizona. And I know because she texted me why she can't be at one of my shirim this week. She said she's in Arizona. She sent me three pictures. Holy moly. I've never been there, but marbu masach Hashem. And pictures don't even do justice to how something really looks. It's indescribable. Three pictures she sent me. It's just simply, I show my husband, I show one of my boys. It's just simply indescribable. Hashem, the world didn't have to be so beautiful. The world didn't have to have such tasty foods. The world didn't have to have so many colors and vibrancies, and the eyes didn't have to see all this. Hashem made life enjoyable. The world is an enjoyable place over on the whole. It is such chesed. It's funny you're saying that because I said over in a shir last week, my sister-in-law said about these gorgeous fall days that Hashem did such a chesed in making the world with such beautiful colors. It could all be monotonous. Maybe everything should just be gray. Why does the world have color? You don't need the color in the leaves to live, right? Like, you could still do mitzvahs if all the leaves are gray all the time, the whole year. It could all be brown, it could all be gray, it could all be black. The whole world. Hashem, it's so vibrant, it's so colorful, it's so gorgeous. Ein tzur ke Elokeinu, says Chana. What does Rashi say? Ein sayar ke Elokeinu. Rashi's quoting the Gemara. There's no artist like Hashem. On the whole, life is an enjoyable experience. But then something happens, says the Rav. God forbid the death of someone close, for example. Shabbat, the Churban, is the ultimate example. And his joy in life comes to an end. And it's not just for the first week of mourning, says Rav. It's not just the first month, the first year. Oh no! That person no longer enjoys life. Something has happened. What has happened? Shavat. And just like we are still mourning for the Churban, or we're supposed to be mourning, we're not supposed to be so taken with galus that we think it's so fantastically perfect here. And it's so, we have no desire to go back. And I'm not talking about to Medina Israel today, even though Halvai should have the ability one day in the right time to live there. But that's not really what we're waiting for ultimately. That's not what we daven for. That's not the ultimate Yeshua. That's not Shabbos, Lamed, Aleph, Aleph, Tzipis, Eli, Yeshua. They're going to ask us in heaven. And we're waiting for the ultimate Geula. Why? Because Shabbat. The Churban was destroyed with such a sense of suddenness. It took us by shock. And we're still reeling from it. It wasn't for a year. It wasn't for a month. I said that out of order. It wasn't for a month. It wasn't for a year. It's for the millennia since. This happens to every individual person sooner or later at a certain time, says Rav. And that's what happened by Churban Yerushalayim. A change took place. Joy came to a stop. It ceased to exist suddenly. The past could not be restored. So what I think is so interesting about this, I mean, it's a longer essay. Actually, I'm going to finish with this last paragraph of the Rav, and then I'll tell you my thought. And I will tell you, says the Rav, the Gentiles do not understand our commitment to Eretz Yisrael. What is wrong with the United States, they ask? You are rich, you have prominence, you have all the educational opportunities you want, your children have a great future. Why do you want to go back there? Apparently, says the Rav Achashverosh, Belshazzar, and all the pagan kings who destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, kept asking their Jewish servants the same question. What do they tell us by the river of Babylon? Shiru lanu mishir tzion. Why can't you sing the songs of God here? Eich nashir shir shema admas nechar. They don't understand that it's foreign soil. We will never ultimately belong here. And they asked their Jews, what attracts you to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash? Something attracts you? You want to go back to Jerusalem? You want to rebuild it? But why? They simply did not, and they simply do not understand. So Shabbat is the fourth element of Churban. One was God's role in the Churban. So we went through, I don't remember two and three right now. I'm not going to take the time to look it back up. Four is God's role in the Churban. Four is the element of Shabbat, which, says the Rav, is emphasized frequently by Chazal. He even says in parentheses, I don't understand why it's emphasized so often. And it is the very first word of the very first kina that is recited on Tisha B'Av. So what I think is very interesting is that perhaps we could say, ready, here comes my connection, Why do we go to that piece? Because Rav Soloveitchik brought it up, right? Everyone knows. I mean, Rav Pinkas brought it up. I was giving a show yesterday on Esav, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and I kept mixing up the names. Yes, the 4 points of the Churban. It's a good question because I said I don't remember, but that's not really nice. The 4 points of the Churban that the Rav says here are, we're not going through all of them, don't worry. One, the role of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the events of the Churban, the role of God in the events of the destruction. Two, the Jewish people are considered filth and refuse amongst the nations. That is true until today. Sometimes we want to delude ourselves, but we can't. Three, there is an element of blasphemy in the relationship of the non-Jewish world to us. So their relationship to Am Yisrael is actually a denial of God's presence. Four is Shavat, what we just said. By the way, I'm not going through it, but five is Hester Panim. I mentioned that. Five is the fact that God's face is concealed from us as we sojourn through Galus. So here's where I want to go now. Rav Pinkas brings this up in the context of Shabbos Kodesh. He starts talking about the absence of the Beis HaMikdash. So now that we read the piece of the Rav, I'm going to give you my connection. I'm going back to Rav Pinkas, middle of page 48. Let us consider the message of this familiar Chazal on Tisha B'Av that falls on Shabbos. I'm going back, I'm reading what we read already, because now I'm going to give you my idea. On Tisha B'Av that falls on Shabbos, one may eat and drink whatever one wishes, and have a table as laden even as that of Shlomo Melech in his prime. So you should not mourn on Shabbos. We don't mourn. What a Chazal telling us. Tisha B'Av is a day on which we realize we have no real life without Hashem being in our midst. Unless the Shechina dwells amongst us in the Beis HaMikdash, we might just as well sit on the ground and cry. We have nothing. The Beis HaMikdash was a place, says Rav Pinkas, top of page 49, where any Jew who sought Hashem could find him. What does Yaakov Avinu say when he wakes up from his dream? Achein yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh, v'anochi lo yadati, manora ha'makom hazeh, ein zeh kim beis elokim v'zeh shar shamayim. Any Jew could come here and find the Ribono Shel Olam, because this is the house of God and the gateway to heaven. V'anochi and I lo yadati, I didn't know this. So what do I want to propose? Perhaps the emphasis on Shabbat, cessation, the suddenness with which the Churban occurred, and its obvious connection to the word Shabbos, because it's the same exact letters, Shin, Beis, Tav, and the Rav even teaches us the Medrash about Hashem's creating Shabbos to prove that the Churban happened unexpectedly. Perhaps the emphasis on Shabbat, when relaying to us the details of the Churban and its focus not only in Megillas Eicha, but also as part of the Kinos, contains a remez, an allusion, and a nechama. Perhaps what Chazal are really saying is, in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash Shabbat, God presents us with nechama, Shabbos. And maybe that's why there's such an emphasis on this linguistic focus on the word Shabbat specifically as it relates to Churban. Hashem could have, I don't know, created Tanakh however he wanted, okay? And Torah Shabbat Pez also Meneshemayim Rashi tells us that many times in Chumash. So why did there have to be such an emphasis on Shabbat? Perhaps the answer is, it's a dual meaning. On the one hand, Shavat means sudden cessation. Even Yirmiyahu was surprised. Kitov talks about it also in Sefer Todah. He was shocked. He went to Asonos to buy the field. Then he comes back and, where's the Beis HaMikdash? What do you mean, where's the Beis HaMikdash? You've been saying for 18 years it's going to be destroyed. You wrote Eicha. You didn't know there's not going to be a Beis HaMikdash? A person can't believe it. How could you believe what's unbelievable? It happened so suddenly. But in the same word Shavat, which represents Churban, Galus, Hester Panim, Chutz Aretz, there's also a message of consolation in the same tool itself. Shavat represents Churban, and Shavat represents the Nechama. You want to know what the antidote You want to know the anti-venom? You want to know how to have nechama in this world, even though there's Churban? Because how could we survive if there's Churban? The very same word that is destruction is the very same word that's our source of nechama and kedusha. You think there's only Shabbat, change it into Shabbos, and now you can survive. Maybe that's why we begin the whole series of kinos with that exact word. Because right as we begin to mourn, you sit down on the floor on Leil Tisha B'Av, and you begin the whole process of mourning. The first word you say is Shabbat. Because what are you saying? There's hope. What's our hope? Shabbos. Because with Shabbos, we can have a tam of the Beis HaMikdash. With Shabbos, we can bring Hashem away from behind the Mechitzas HaBarzel into our homes and into our lives. With Shabbos, we can have consolation for Shabbat. So let's just finish this section from the top of the 30 seconds. But amazingly enough, if this day falls on Shabbos, says Rav Pinkas, top is page 49, we eat meat, we drink wine as if nothing happened. What is the meaning of this? Remember his original question. Why, if Tisha B'Av falls on Shabbos, do we rejoice? Where did the Churban Beis HaMikdash disappear to? The answer is we have Shabbos. But this doesn't mean the Kedusha of Shabbos diverts our mind from Churban. On the contrary, the Kedusha of Shabbos fills the vacuum left by destruction. In a sense, on Shabbos, we have the Beis HaMikdash. For in its simple sense, the Beis HaMikdash is the house of Hashem, Ein Zekim, Beis Elohim, Sadi Yaakov, and Shabbos is the day of Hashem. And perhaps, I think, that's why it could be, I don't know, but that's why there's such a focus on Shabbat, both in Eicha, in the Kinnis, and in the Mamre Chazal, because Chazal are alluding to us that the greatest gift, the antidote or anti-venom to Shabbat, is Shabbos Kodesh. And with that, I wish you a wonderful Shabbos Kodesh, a meaningful and true Shabbat Shalom, a Shabbos of peace. And Be'ezor Hashem, we will continue in 2 weeks' time. Thank you to our sponsor and our family. Tizkul Mitzos Ulamaisim Tovim. Thank you, everybody. Good Shabbos. Kol Tov.